Bye.
Thomas, the artist and producer of Art Talk Bus Stop. Today we're recording on May 8th of 2020, and this is our first Art Talk Bus Stop episode from quarantine. So you might notice a little bit of a difference in the sound this week. That's because we are all in different places and recording together on a video chat. So we will do our best to keep the sound nice for you and see how it goes.
Welcome to Art Talk Bus Stop. I'm Nicola, senior at Reynolds.
I'm Mandy, a sophomore at Reynolds.
I'm Katie Sullivan, art teacher at Reynolds High School.
Hi, my name's Sarah Farahat. I'm based here in Portland, Oregon, and I'm a transdisciplinary Egyptian-American artist, activist, and educator.
Well, thank you for being here today. My first question for you is, growing up, when did you start noticing that art was something you really loved and kind of got into?
Yeah, I spent a lot of time outside as a kid, and I think when I wasn't outside, I was either with a nose in a book or my mom had, you know, shoved a pencil in my hand or something, or some crayons. There wasn't really an aha moment as a young person. Later, I found out that my mother had always really wanted to take art classes, and they didn't really have the money for that when she was growing up, and so she ended up becoming a classical flautist, but had always kind of been interested in the arts, sort of the visual arts. And so, you know, I think I credit her a lot with that. I think it took me quite a while to decide that I wanted to pursue art professionally. I think I was in my mid-20s by the time that I was like, I want to go to art school. I want to kind of push this further than I have been.
So out of all the different types of art that you could have done, you chose to kind of lean towards this political kind of art. Why do you think that is?
I mean, I would argue that we're all political beings and bodies. And I think that that, based on our locations and our identities, really informs how we walk through the world. And so as a human who grew up with a Muslim father and a Christian mother, as a woman, as someone who is mixed, who have all my Egyptian side of my family halfway across the world, my upbringing was inherently political. And so the same with art, there wasn't a moment, an aha moment for me in terms of like understanding the world through the context of like race, class, gender, sexuality, all of those things. I think that those are things that were sort of ingrained in me by my parents and by my experiences of the world and those of the people around me. So I think college definitely had something to do with becoming more politicized and feeling like I might have some agency or ability to affect change. I had a class called Slavery, Internment, and the Prison Industrial Complex. that was taught to me by a Professor Foreman when I was down in LA, and that was a class where we both read historical documents, but also looked at pop culture and also looked at current and contemporary politics and kind of crafted plans to work through. Specifically in California, there was Prop 21, which is was named the Juvenile Justice Initiative, but it really meant that it was creating situations in which younger and younger people were getting locked up. And so we kind of organized as a class around Prop 21. And so for me, that was a really pivotal moment in the way that I thought about activism and the ability to affect change and myself as sort of a possibility to be an agent of change. So I think it just kind of seeped in slowly into my art through all the experiences of my life.
So you mentioned wanting to make a change and sort of putting your voice out there as kind of like a way to be politically active. And one of your big projects was the TriMet Max mural. When you wanted to do that, why landscape art? Was landscape something that you wanted it to be?
By landscape, you mean like mural or public art? Well, I mean, I spent some of my formative years in LA, and LA and is highly influenced by, you know, the Mexican muralist traditions, and there's lots of public art. And for me, it kind of mirrors my feeling of like art as being a part of life and a part of breath. We've all come from beautiful cultural traditions that involve the arts and have furthered all of our cultures, no matter where we come from in the world. And so the accessibility of things that you come across in public, like graffiti or wheat pasting or murals, or even the way that advertising, we see advertising in the world, like all of those things have such power, and you don't have to walk into a gallery to experience them. Mm-hmm. So I think that also just kind of naturally followed my interest in having things that could speak directly to people, regardless of location and class and language.
And getting started with the mural, can you kind of tell us the process of how that happened?
Sure, yeah. So the mural at the Hollywood Transit Center was commissioned by TriMet. And the site, if people haven't visited the site, it is a very busy location. It has street traffic, it has a bus station, it has the MAX, it also has Amtrak, and it's right next to the highway. It's also a place that historically has been somewhere that houseless people kind of live and hang out. The specific site for the mural was set on sort of a wheelchair/bike accessible ramp, as well as stairs that go over to a bridge that access the MAX. So that's kind of the topography of the location. So TriMet had been planning to do something in that space even before the attacks happened that killed Ricky Best and Talesian Namkhai Mechi. The community rallied and created an impromptu art installation. They wrote words in chalk. They brought flowers. There were all sorts of things that happened in that space way before I became a part of the project. So TriMet decided they wanted to kind of commemorate that through a more permanent installation. Yeah, so that was kind of the environment that I was going into as the artist. I mean, practically speaking, they put out a call for proposals, and then they kind of narrowed it down to three, and then we created these like more elaborate proposals, and there was a big committee and cameras and all sorts of things, and yeah, I had to give a presentation. So each step of the way was really like a chance for me to further solidify what my vision for that space would be and to get community feedback as to what would make sense collectively. So it was really, while it was my vision initially, it became a pretty collaborative project over time.
So you mentioned kind of publicity and cameras and everything. What was that like for you? Was that different? Were you kind of like, oh, no, I don't really like this?
That's a really good question, Nicole, because I think It was a bit uncomfortable. This is airing on KBOO. I had a show on KBOO for about 6 years, so I'm comfortable being recorded. And I've been on camera before in various ways, but I am not necessarily an extrovert, but that wasn't really the main issue. It was just the feeling that this was a moment in Portland where many communities, specifically, I would say, more privileged communities, white communities, were understanding the difficulties that people of color and people, you know, Muslims and people that are more vulnerable in our community feel when they take public transportation, because the main targets of the attack were actually two young Black women. So it was hard for me to feel justified in taking up space as a voice and to not just want to point the cameras towards the issues of white supremacy happening in Portland. And also to recognize that there were families and the city was grieving the loss of two people who passed away and were murdered in defending those women. So it was complicated again from the cameras, I guess I should say. So I did my best to kind of keep a spotlight pointed on the real issues while talking about the project.
So sort of shifting towards community, why do you think people become so close together when art is involved?
It's funny, I think if I had to do it all over, I might have tried to become a musician, because in certain ways, music, you throw it up in the air, and like, as long as you have hearing, and even if you just feel vibration, it's vibrating through your body. A different way than art vibrates, but I think that there's ways that we see and feel art in whatever form it is, whether it's poetry or a painting or a mural or a dance or music, that just touch us on a level that maybe is past vocalization. Like, yeah, later we can put words to why that thing moved us. One of the things that I think is so powerful about art is that it moves us beyond our verbal language.
When you have a vision or when you see something, does it just like come to you, like the mural, did it just come to you and you had to just make some tweaks, or did you have to have a long time to think about it to really put some thought, or how does your vision process work?
That's a really good question, Manny. I think it's not the same. Each project is different. I tend to be somebody who thinks a lot in words, like I do some writing, so I may come up with a concept and then put visuals to it, but then sometimes it is very much like the symbols or the feeling comes to me and I just work intuitively that way instead of more conceptually to begin with. So I kind of go at it from both directions, and then generally, depending on how long the project is, it'll go through a period of, like, if I've been working really conceptually, I'll go towards like trying to tease out a part of it intuitively and just kind of play without trying to kind of self-critique in the middle. Or if I'm doing something and making a drawing, for a while I'll just make the drawing and then I'll look back at it and be like, well, what's working, what's not, what am I trying to say, and kind of work more kind of with my head on it for a little while. It kind of oscillates back and forth. With TriMet, it was definitely like more conceptual to begin with.
We've done a lot of work kind of all over the place. So do you have a particular place or piece that you are really drawn to that you really love?
That's a good question. I mean, I have a soft spot for mural work. Like, it is something, especially the TriMet piece, it's so big. It's 26 walls and it's really vibrant color-wise. And it says a lot of things that the words that people have generated who have a lot of heart. And I think so walking through and being immersed in those spaces feels really powerful. And so I really appreciate works like that I've made that still exist in real space. You know, a lot of things that show in galleries just kind of live in my studio until somebody else wants to show them. So they feel a little more, they feel less alive than things that are being actively looked at and changed by the public. For instance, the TriMet mural, for a while when there were all the protests against ICE, people were meeting there for the protests. And for me, that was the fact that I could make something that becomes a meeting place and has another life that I'm not in control of keeps it alive, and I love that. And things that are really ephemeral that I might put up for a few days and then they leave, and I just kind of can wonder, like, who got to experience that thing and who didn't, which can happen in locations that, you know, I'm not in anymore, like some of the work that I did in Lebanon and in the Bay Area too. Yeah.
So you mentioned that you were in Lebanon, and I think I also heard from the grapevine that you lived in Egypt for a while. So what was that kind of like?
Yeah, I've had the privilege of being in, the Swana region countries that I've been in. So Swana, Southwest Asia, North Africa is a term that people are using more and more frequently to describe the Middle East as a way of not thinking of like middle of what, east of what, which is a pretty colonial term. So Egypt has always been home to me. That's where I've gone there back and forth since I was small, but I did have the opportunity to live there when I was in middle school and high school. My father got transferred there, so our whole family moved. So it's hard to answer, like, what was Egypt like, because it's kind of like, what's the U.S. like, or what's Portland like? Lebanon was very different. It's a country that has gone through intense civil war and borders, Israel and Palestine and Syria. And so when I was there, it was during the Arab Spring. And so there was a lot of tension about what that was going to look like for Lebanon. The Lebanese people are now in revolution currently. So like familiar and different, I guess that's how I could sum it up. We were like cousins to each other, so things were familiar and different. But it was really important to me to start to get to feel how my work functioned through an audience that shares some of my cultural heritage, and like what the conversations are around art that are happening in the Swana region, and shifting the narrative so I'm not solely getting opinions from people who live here about what's important and what art looks like and what artists to look at, who's influencing culture.
As an artist who works with all these really kind of intense themes, how do you take care of yourself as an artist and as a person?
It's a good question, Erica. It's a tough time to talk about self-care, I think, right now. An important conversation, but I think challenging right now because there's a lot more pressure on our socialization. And we're in the middle of Ramadan, and for me, that's like a time of a lot of connection with friends and family, and it's been feeling really tough to not have as much of that as I would like. I mean, I guess the last couple of years I've been a little bit more working in my studio and doing less work in public. The TriMet mural was very exhausting, emotionally exhausting. It was also physically exhausting, but once we started really forming what was happening there and starting to put some of the words on, we were activating a memorial. We were creating a site for grieving, and so we also became the people on site that held people's stories, that people came up to us and talked about being on the MAX train when the stabbing happened. They talked to us about like losing their coworker who they worked with. They talked, you know, there were so many, or about racism in Portland in general. So I can speak on that project for our mural team. We were smudging ourselves down at the beginning and the end of every day. We were trying to make time to just be quiet when we went home, because it was really starting to affect our mental health in terms of our ability to like stay grounded, especially as I explained, the location is so transitional. There's so much movement there. So it was just like a lot to try to stay grounded and hold these heavy subjects and be both creating the art and also holding space for other people to share. So since that project, and even before that project, I'd spent some time at Standing Rock, which was very challenging physically and emotionally for all of us who were there, I think, and inspiring, of course. But so I've kind of gone, you know, for myself, like, it might not look very hermity to other people, but I've gone a little more hermity in terms of the way my art is manifesting and doing a lot more stuff kind of in studio than social engaged work right now.
Your projects seem to take up a lot of time, and as you mentioned earlier, you're an educator as well. So now, how do you find a balance between that, doing big projects, but still yet teaching, but wanting to put out work?
Man, y'all are asking all the hard questions. I think balance or harmony with all of the things that we do in a capitalist society is like really challenging. And I think, you know, some of this time has gotten really stretchy since we've been sheltering in place. And I think that a lot of people are kind of examining the way that they do manage all of the things that they do in their lives. I can say for myself, it is hard to make art while I'm teaching because I consider teaching a creative process. I really collaborate or attempt to collaborate with my students. And I want to help them understand their own agency within a classroom setting. So figuring out how to do that, which is kind of undoing the way that many of us have been educated. There's a lot of like showing up in a classroom and the teacher tells you some stuff and you go home and you do your homework and you show up again. But creating a space that is more like a co-creative learning environment is much more interesting and inspiring to me. So when I'm teaching, that becomes my work, my creative work. And I'll do some art projects on the side, but it's really challenging to do both at the same time for me.
As a teacher myself, and for other teachers listening to this, having this time away from that community and away from that contact to be able to collaborate, has there been a moment or a thought that's really stuck out to you of something that you want to bring back to your practice when you're able to be in a setting again?
In a classroom setting?
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because I did start teaching a class when the coronavirus began. I'm teaching a class for kids. I was really feeling the panic that a lot of my friends who have kids have around, like, how am I going to now become a teacher and probably a full-time worker to some other job and keep up the house and do all the things that need to be done and in a high-pressure situation. So I have been, something that I had been wanting to do was open up my studio to young people in the summer times. And so I've used this time where I'm seeing that, like, my friends could use a little relief of like an hour or two where someone else is helping out their kids do a project to test that out. But I think we're going to be in an ongoing situation of it may not look the same in the fall that it did last fall when I was in school. So I'm not sure I know how to answer that question quite yet. I'm kind of just kind of feeling out and figuring out what that looks like. I think there's certain things about the online learning model that are very interesting and in certain ways make it more accessible for certain people, but I'm very relational, so it's really hard to kind of feel the, especially with art, to not just like hang out and check out what people are doing and be able to cruise around and look at what your classmates are doing and vibe off of each other in that way. So I'm not really sure. Like, I would love to teach in a higher education system where there's no grades, where you're just showing up and I'm there to facilitate what your learning process is like and share what I know instead of like delivering certain material. Cause that's what I think that's more what I would like to see out of a higher education system. So, but I don't think that's happening anytime in the next short while. Although there was some conversation about switching to like pass fail versus grading just because this semester has been so challenging for everyone. So some good things might come out of that in terms of the way that we think about grading art.
Yes, it's an ongoing question, I think.
Sarah, do you have any questions for the students?
I mean, I would love to know what y'all are working on and how you're keeping up with feeling creative or feeling inspired, or like how you're just navigating being more cut off from your community. Like, what does that look like for you, and how are you continuing to be inspired? Or maybe you're not, maybe you're just like, I'm watching movies all day because that's what makes me feel better right now. Like, I'm curious about y'all's life. Manny, you have anything to share, or Nicole?
I don't know. I feel like, do you want to go first, Nicole?
I can go first. I feel like during this time, this has been more of a sort of chance to sort of step out of my comfort zone and just kind of explore new things. Like right now, I'm working on a portrait. I never work with portraits. I stick mainly to landscape. I've been picking up sewing, tending to my garden. I usually do that, but I had more time to do that this year. So just really looking to new creative outlets, trying to stick with that, sort of what I've been doing.
I haven't been really doing much this quarantine or during this time. I've been watching a lot of videos of people doing stuff. I feel like that really inspires me, because when I watch other people do it, I feel like I could possibly do it, you know?
What are you watching people do?
Like, I've been watching a lot of chalk art. I don't know, that just seems really simple and cool. I've just thought of it like as something I played with as a kid. But now that I watch like videos of people making these very inspirational pieces, and I'm just like, I think I could possibly do that, or even a smaller portion, like just in my driveway, you know?
Yeah, sometimes you gotta just do it, just start and see what happens.
What would be your advice to like young aspiring artists out there?
I think my advice would be just keep making things. You learn a lot by just trying stuff out. I think I wish I was less critical of myself. So just trying to like put aside all of those, like, I'm not good enough, I don't see people like me doing the thing that I want to do, like just try it out. And you don't have to show it to anybody until you feel good about it, but like, or maybe you just have like a trusted friend or two that you share your things with, and just be like, hey, I feel really sensitive about this, but what do you think? Like, I'm curious about these things. So, and we're in such a cool age of like, there are so many videos online, like you say, Manny, that kind of you can get tutorials, and I really just believe art is coming from you, so there's no way you can really do it wrong. You know, and you're going to get better as you practice and as you start to figure out what it is that gives you joy and how you can create joy in other people or create feeling in other people. It can be all sorts of feelings, but just say what it is you want to say. For me, it's like, wow, some one person got it. Like, that's amazing. I made that one connection with one person, and that's really special. So just keep doing it. It doesn't have to look like anyone else's thing. The weirder, the better.
Would you say all your art pieces are connected in a way, or are they like all their own different pieces?
That's a really neat question, because I think especially for those of us who make things that aren't all the same medium, it can feel a lot like they're disconnected, and it's definitely a lot harder to apply for funding when you do work that looks all different. But yeah, for me, I feel like I've been ruminating around the same kinds of questions my whole life, really, but then more, you know, in these formal ways in art, around how do we walk in the world? How does our body and our particular like socio-political locations, how does that manifest? What do we do with that? How do we think about solidarity? How do we think about art as a possibility for social movement building or education, shifting the way people think about other groups of people? Yeah, race, cultural identity, connection, grief. Like, I've been really noticing that there's this theme of grief and how we deal or don't deal with it, and what that looks like. And I mean, I think going back to the question Erica had about like, how do I take care of myself? I think I've been really trying to pay attention to the grief that I feel. And I think anyone that's paying attention or living right now has grief, whether they're paying attention to it or not paying attention to it. In Chinese medicine, grief and the lungs are very connected. So I find it really not surprising that our lungs are what's being affected by this current virus, because I think we've done so many things both to our fellow humans and to the planet that cause grief, but we have not dealt with our grief and have not grieved. Yeah, I'm trying to pay attention to when that happens for me and let it through and recognize that grief or whatever manifests as your grief, like that watered seeds for a different future. That's all I got for you, Manny.
Thank you.
What kind of advice would you give an artist who's a teenager who's really interested in expressing their grief or finding an avenue for social justice within their art?
I think just you know, reading books, educating yourself about whatever it is that you want to be speaking about, or whether that looks like not reading books but interviewing your neighbors or your friends or your family who are living those experiences, making work and sharing and finding community with other people that care about those things. I think that that feels really important to me, is creating spaces where we can feel comfortable to express ourselves and be our as fully ourselves as possible. And there's some artists that I really look up to. They're Jesus Barraza and Melanie Cervantes. They're in the Bay Area, and they are printmakers, but they also pair up with community organizations and create graphics for them, and, you know, like plan graphics for protests. And so figuring out ways to just integrate your work in whatever way that you care about, you'll figure it out. Don't let fear stop you. One last thing I would say is, you don't need a bunch of fancy stuff to be an artist. You can use your garbage, you can use a pen, you can use a burnt piece of charcoal, you can use dirt, you can use coffee. Like, you don't need stuff in order to be an artist. You can figure it out. People have been doing that since the days of the cave paintings.
Yes.
Well, I think that concludes our talk today. Thank you, Sarah, for coming on today, and thank you for everyone for participating.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. And welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a national audience, produced at a different location every week. Hey, I'm Nick Espinoza of the Deep Dive Radio Show, where we talk about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related, broadcasting out of the Chicagoland area on WHIW 101.3 FM. And today on Sprouts, we have a very special guest for you. I am talking to Mike.